Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. And all of you in the U.S. shivering and shuddering in this miserable weather.
Including us.
Including us. Just sit back and relax. Enjoy the thoughts of being as we were recently in Italia, where it was sunny for the most part and always just beautifully pleasant.
And for today's program, we're in Siena.
Siena.
Which one time was a very important city and now is just a very beautiful city. And some very more traditional in the way of restaurants than some of the places that we managed to discover, but great fun nevertheless. So we visited two family owned restaurants. And we're going to put those first. Then we move quite a long way away.
That was a long drive.
To the southern part of Remarque, to the architecturally magnificent town of Ascoli Piceno, and then just to make sure you're all on track and you're in a position where you have recipes that you can follow, as well as just people you can listen to about the wonderful food. Our old friend Lydia Bastianich. With yet another great cookbook of Italian food that's within reach of you in the kitchen. So that's today's outline. Now let's go backwards, forwards, whichever you like, to the wonderful city of Siena.
We are always, it seems, reporting to you after a fabulous meal. I hope we're not making you jealous. And we're doing it again. We just had a spectacular tasting menu at the Osteria La Loggia in Siena, Italy. And we're going to be talking to some of the principals, including the chef, about the menu, the business, the place, and everything. First off, I'm going to ask you to explain what the background is. And we're talking to Mirko Vigni, and he's going to be explaining, and he's going to talk to us about this business, and somehow you can also slide in there the Gianni Brunelli vineyard and olive oil, which also we sampled. But tell us, how old is this restaurant, this osteria?
Buongiorno a tutti. I'm just saying, first of all, I'm Mirko Vigni from the Osteria Le Logge. The restaurant is born in 1977 from Gianni Brunelli and Laura. They opened this place. There was a simple osteria inside an old grocery store. Mother was cooking. The restaurant grew up with this clientele slowly, years by years, till where we are now, where Gianni Brunelli and Laura now has a winery in Montalcino, where they produce beautiful Brunello and a great olive oil. And me and a chef Nico, following mostly the restaurant. I became their partner in 2000, so it's already some years that I'm with them, so they could take time more and more to follow the vineyard. And we had more experience to follow the restaurant. I have to say that in this moment it's changed a lot, the restaurant. It's not anymore a simple osteria, but it's a very nice, fine cuisine with a great creation of Nico Trigna.
This chef that we're going to talk to is Nico at Trigna. Is it Trigna? And we're going to do some translating back and forth here. But, boy, all you have to do is give me your food, and I understand your heart. We had a wonderful meal. Where did you come from? Are you Sienese?
Buongiorno, sono Nico Trigna, chef dell'Osteria Le Logge. La cucina delle logge è basata sui prodotti giornalieri di tutti i giorni che compriamo al mercato. In più facciamo una cucina tradizionale un po' rivisitata con nuove tecniche e nuovi abbinamenti. Facciamo la pasta fatta in casa, cerchiamo di preparare tutto noi nella cucina delle logge. Quindi abbiamo una cucina che gira a 360 gradi.
Nico was saying that the kitchen grows with all the ingredients day by day. So the menu change every day and everything is fresh and made inside. So like pasta, like the breads and all the vegetables, the meats are selected from the area. So come out a kitchen that is, I could say, like classic from the terroir, just from the first material, because the rest there is a lot of creation from the chef.
I really would like for him to explain that wonderful muscle in its shell, which was not a shell. Describe that for our listeners.
Le cozze che avete assaggiato vengono dalla tradizione mia, essendo campano e mangiamo molte le cozze, la pepata di cozze, mi piaceva fare questa cozza con il guscio, quindi abbiamo usato una pasta filo colorata al nero di seppia per far sì che fosse un guscio commestibile. Quindi in un boccone solo avere la croccantezza e la morbidezza della cozza. Quindi questa è l'idea di oggi che c'è nata.
The mussels that the chef was trying to explain, it's bringing back to his original. He's from south of Italy, and so they use a lot mussels in their food, like the pepata di cozze. And so he wanted to recompose the mussels in his own shell. And he made it with filo d'oppa pastry, salty, of course, with the black ink outside. So it's like black, the shell of the mussels. But it's crispy, and inside you have the softness of the mussels that is just cooked sauté very, very slowly.
This man is a very serious chef, listeners. We went through a menu. Every dish was a surprise. He stays very conscious, does he not, with his food? Does he travel and eat a lot?
Nico just said that it's... He likes to experiment food because he's studying food from long, long time. He worked with Gianfranco Vissani. He had an history on traditional food in the beginning. So he's a big lover of the real cuisine, but at the same time, he's a big, big lover of the new creation, of the future. So he likes to mix his classic, maybe tomatoes pasta, very simple, with the great tomatoes, with the new idea, with new technique, with new experimentation of the food. And he does traveling, talking with the chef, but mostly traveling in his brain.
Well, I'm looking over this menu, and I just wanted people to know some of what we had to eat so they get an idea of the food. And we did have some classics, like the peachy. Explain what peachy is, and also that it's made in-house.
The peachy is the classic pasta of the area. It's look like spaghetti, but it's very particular pasta because it's, first, there is no eggs. And second, it's made, all the difference of the pasta is made with the end pressures. Because when you do the peachy, you don't use any machine to put the pasta inside, but you use just the end pressure to make the circles goes on. And so if you are able to do it and you don't do so much pressure, the pasta is like a poem inside. You have this perfect cooking from inside to outside, and it's very good, the porosity for all the sauces to go inside. For example, now you can find so many peaches around, but when you have a machine peaches, it's really a bad example of spaghetti. Because the peaches, the only way to taste it good is handmade.
Well, it was wonderful, and also my favorite of everything we had was the piccione, and there's a whole story about that. Peter was saying, did you just shoot this yourself, chef? And you explained, no, this is not what you do. Tell us about the piccione, which was so delicious and so perfectly cooked.
But the pigeon...
Il piccione arriva dal Piemonte, da un'azienda che si chiama Greppi. Arriva qua, lo dissociamo, facciamo un trattamento, mariniamo sia il petto e la coscia, facciamo un sugo e poi cuociamo un piccione in padella espresso 2 minuti in forno dopo la rosolatura, e oggi l'abbiamo impiattato con un patè di fegatini di piccione e il wafer alle nocciole.
The chef was saying that the attention on the pigeon starts from the beginning, because it's very important to the farm of the pigeon, the food the pigeon gets, then it could make the preparation for the pigeon like you tasted today. It means that it was the breast was pretty rare. That means that you have to have a quality of the meat that is outstanding. In this case today, usually the pigeon is prepared and when arrived is deboned, is marinated, and after the cooking is just sauteed, and 2 minutes on the oven after the sauté. Today was served with a wafer of hazelnuts, and was served with a pâté made of the same liver of the pigeons. The farm where the pigeon we get in, sometimes we use it local, sometimes not. But in this case, it's probably the best farm we have in Italy. It's Grappi Pier Giuseppe.
And to go along with that, although we did actually drink Montalcino wine throughout lunch, this could not have been a more perfect pairing. Now, talk to us a little bit about the wine side that's associated with the restaurant.
Well, next time you see Montepulciano, I abandon the place and I go away. But anyway, the wine from Montalcino, I'm joking, of course. But the wine from Montalcino, it's a beautiful match for many different things. Because it depends how it's made and which type. In this case today, we match the Rosso di Montalcino. That from our own winery, of course, the Gianni Brunelli. And we try to do on the Rosso di Montalcino a wine that could be drunk from the morning till night. A wine that is good for breakfast, for lunch, for the afternoon, for dinner, with cheese, with important meal, or with very soft meal. It's a really a wine to be drunk. It's a light Sangiovese, just big oak, nice acidity, a great fruit, and you never feel the alcohol, you never feel the heaviness on the mouth. So you have this wine that you keep drinking, you understand it just when you get up, but that's not important for us. And I think especially with the pigeon is a great match, because the pigeon is not a strong meat. So you need to have a wine that, I don't know how to say it in English, the word, but goes around the mouth without punching with the pigeon. You know, like when you eat chestnuts and you put water on it, you know, you don't need to take off the flavor, but just to arm. So that's a perfect wine to arm this pigeon that has a lot of flavors and a lot of taste.
Now, alongside the pigeon, which Anne was eating, I had a wonderful lamb shoulder. Perhaps Chef can tell us about all the work that went into that. I'm sure it was quite a lot.
La spalla d'agnello che prepariamo, prendiamo le spalle, le dissociamo, le lasciamo 20 minuti sotto il sale, poi le sciacchiamo, le passiamo in padelle e le facciamo diventare confit. Le cuociamo a 62 gradi per 24 ore. Poi assembliamo il tutto per una notte sotto peso e poi sporzioniamo e avvolgiamo in foglie di melanzane. Poi passiamo in padelle e serviamo con questa torta di pane raffermo, visto che siamo a Siena, usiamo la tradizione, si usa la panzanella, la ribollita, dove il pane raffermo di un giorno. Noi abbiamo pensato di farci questa focaccia, essendo nel periodo natalizio mettiamo le arance, l'uva alla passa, i pinoli, le mandorle, quindi ci piace abbinare un po' questa, anche se è una torta che si fa anche nel Veneto, si chiama pizza.
The chef was saying that the lamb shoulder, it's when they arrive, they debone the lamb shoulder, they put it under salt, they keep 20 minutes under salt, after, of course, they wash it, and they saute. After that is done, a confit cooking, it's cooked at 62 degrees for 20 hours. And after that, they put one night the shoulders under a weight that keeps them together, so they could cut the morning after a terrine exactly. And in this case, was served with a little piece of bread. It's made with old bread of one day, like the Tuscan tradition is. Like we have a lot of using bread, like the panzanella, the classic Tuscan bread salad in the summer. And all this aromatic dish, and after it's served with the same sauce, and gives a lot of flavors to the lamb.
Now, listeners, those of you who are regulars know that Miss Anne claims that she never eats dolce. Well, I've been catching her out recently, and we caught her out again today with two absolutely delicious desserts. Perhaps Chef can tell us what they consisted of.
Un dolce di oggi era la nocciola, quindi avevamo questo dolce piemontese che abbiamo nel menù delle logge da diversi anni, saranno 6 anni che penso che sia nella carta delle logge. Abbiamo questa zuppa di nocciole del Piemonte con un pan di Spagna alle nocciole cotto in microonde, più un gelato alle nocciole, e abbiamo dei cannoncini di pasta filo farciti di una crema salata, uno dei dolci. L'altro dolce era tipo un Monte Bianco, avevamo una mousse al cioccolato e una mousse di castagne, e nel mezzo c'erano delle sfogliatine di castagna. Quindi lo servivamo poi il tutto con della rapa rossa marinata nello sciroppo e cotta nello sciroppo con un po' di quandro.
The two desserts, they were two different things, because the first one is one classic on Le Logge. It's a dessert made with Piemontese hazelnuts that we have probably on the menu from 4 or 5 years. And it's this cream is served on top with a sponge cake made still with hazelnuts and cooked microwave. So it's really a sponge cake. It's no consistency. At the same time, it's served some gelato with hazelnuts and a little cannoli made with a filo d'opa pastry with vanilla and salty pine nuts. So the salt helps to break the taste and start again every bite. The last dessert is more a period dessert because we are talking of a remade of a Mont Blanc. So we are talking about chestnuts that in the fall it's our argument. And here you have this thousand foil made of hazelnuts and chocolate mousse. All the foil are made with chestnut flour. And on top you have these red beets marinated, made like a syrup, and served, a foil together with a white chocolate.
And I mean, it's absolutely stunning to look at, too, and the presentation is beautiful. Listeners, will you agree, by the way, that Mirko Vignier is a poet as well as a partner in this restaurant? What kind of a name is Mirko?
Mirko, originally, is a Croatian name. But I don't know why, in the period from the 70s till the 80s, in Italy, there are many, many Mirko. And now you don't find it anymore. I don't know, also because my brother that is older is called Marco, so it's, you can imagine.
You were making fun of my eating a dessert. Will the photograph you took make it onto the website along with my, what was it, the corn sundae I ate? It was bigger than my head.
Well, the corn sundae is already on there. That's another story. But yeah, I have a feeling that this picture might find its way onto the website. The important thing for you listeners is to know how to get here. So truly, this is just around the corner from the Campo, where they have the funky horse race called the Palio. But you can get more information about how to get here, how they're open, look at their menus at the website. But I can't remember what it is. Mirko?
Our website is www.osterialeloge.it. And you also find on the website a link to a new place that we just opened. That is our wine cellar. We did a new wine cellar that is 4 floors. And if happens that you come to Siena, you have to visit it because it's one of the best wine show on the world. And the top floor is a jazz bar with a wine bar where you can drink a glass of wine at night. And you find a link also of that in our website.
Well, we thank you so much for taking care of us so well today. We thank you so much for taking the time to stay on and talk to our audience. Chef's entitled to a break, but his break between lunch and dinner is getting very much shorter. But Nico, thank you so much for joining us.
Grazie a tutti di il pranzo qui alle Logge.
And we'll be back with another Sienese adventure right after the break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. Next up, we have the Taverna San Giuseppe.
Which is a really interesting place because it's built in a cave.
Right. And, well,
on top of a cave.
Yeah. I mean, there is part of it. Don't we have a photo of this, by the way?
It's on the website, yes.
It's on the website. Okay. In the wine cave.
Yeah. According to the owners that we talked to, people lived in this cave before Christianity in the really ancient days of the city of Siena. I wanted to interject something that we forgot to mention about the Le Logge, the Osteria Le Logge.
Oh, yeah. Because
we sat at a table right inside the door, but it was a big table, and apparently one of the favored places to sit of a British economist who somehow or other found himself teaching at the University of Siena. I've forgotten his name, but I did think he was rather interesting. He was sitting in a place that was favored by someone who spent 30 years of his life teaching at the university there, so he must have really liked it, and we liked it too. But anyway, back to
moving on to the cave.
Back to Taverna San Giuseppe on top of the cave, another family-owned restaurant and lots of fun. We talked to
Saint Joseph. Is there. That the patron saint of Siena? I forget.
I don't think so, but we don't have time to find that. If you want to know who the patron saint of Siena is,
maybe he says it.
Google it.
Okay. Welcome back. Next up, we have the Taverna San Giuseppe.
Which is a really interesting place because it's built in a cave.
Right. Well,
or on top of a cave.
Yeah. I mean, there's part of it. Don't we have a photo of this, by the way?
It's on the website, yes.
It's on the website. Okay. Me in the wine cave.
Yeah. According to the owners that we talked to, people lived in this cave before Christianity in the really ancient days of the city of Siena. I wanted to interject something that we forgot to mention about the La Loggia, the Osteria La Loggia.
Oh, yeah. Because
we sat at a table right inside the door, but it was a big table, and apparently one of the favored places to sit of a British economist who somehow or other found himself teaching at the University of Siena. I've forgotten his name, but I did think he was rather interesting. He was sitting in a place that was favored by someone who spent 30 years of his life teaching at the university there. So he must have really liked it, and we liked it too. But anyway, back to Taverna San Giuseppe on top of the cave. Another family-owned restaurant and lots of fun. We talked to
Saint Joseph. Is that the patron saint of Siena? I forget.
I don't think so. But we don't have time to find that. If you want to know who the patron saint of Siena is,
maybe he says it.
Google it.
Okay. We would actually like to have owner Marco Neri say a few words to us. After having such a wonderful lunch at the Taverna di San Giuseppe in, of course, Siena. Marco, how old is your restaurant? And say something nice to our listeners.
This restaurant is open 1998. And before, I had another restaurant in the other part of Siena for 20 years.
Peter said, how did you get to look like George Clooney?
Yes, in fact, there is many, many American women, usually, that tell me, are you George Clooney? No, he's my brother.
Well, of course, he lives here in Lake Guarda, huh? Clooney, abita qui, I'm not vicino qui, lago.
Yes, George Clooney is in north of Italy, near Milano in Como. I had one big house in Como.
Bigger house and more women. Yeah. We also need to thank our chef for today and forever is Massimiliano. Larry Massimiliano worked here, ha lavorato qui 25 anni.
Lavoro qui da 7 anni, però prima ho lavorato con il padre di Marco per 20 anni. Così sono cresciuto insieme a lui, insieme a suo padre.
So actually the chef said that he worked with the father of the manager in here, the father of Marco, for 20 years, and now is a 7 year that work with Marco.
The concept for this kitchen, as I understand it, Massimiliano, is traditional Sienese cooking with creative twists.
Avevo 16 anni e il mio maestro è il padre di Marco Neri, ha 83 anni. Praticamente ho imparato la cucina vecchia toscana di 83 anni fa. Ho sempre fatto questo lavoro ormai da 30 anni.
So he started to do this job when he was 16 and his master was the father of the owner, the father of Marco. And now here he make a traditional kitchen from Tuscany, but in some dishes he create something like innovation in the kitchen.
What is your favorite, Massimiliano, ingredient to work with? We've had a lot of porcini, We've had Truffolo, we've had Ricci. Sì.
Preferisco molto il cinghiale e i porcini, che è proprio la nostra tradizione toscana.
He really like work to porcini mushrooms and the wild boar because it's the original the basic of our kitchen in Tuscany.
And this is also, we are in November, so this is the special season for both of these things, the porcini and the cinghiale, and also we had venison. Is that also?
That's,
oh, always, okay. The wild boar is in a particular season? Always, okay. It's too many. That's why you have to go shoot them. Huh? So tell us about these availability of these ingredients.
So the wild boar and venison is a lot, and it's big problem for the farmer, for the house, because they arrive close to the house, they broke everything, so the government savior too short and have all the year. The seasonality of the product is truffle and mushroom porcini. Now it's the best season for that product, because there is the white truffle and there is the fresh mushroom porcini. So you can have a salad, you can have pasta, you can have meat with porcini, meat with truffle. And this is two of the best dish we have in the restaurant. We use a lot in the season, mushroom and truffle, and it's a specialty of this restaurant. Massimiliano make one of, for me, the best gnocchi I ever tasted with the truffle. It's made with potato and ricotta cheese. The sauce is sheep cheese sauce and fresh truffle sliced over. And the ragu also, it's a specialty of Massimiliano. He have long cooking for this ragu, for the beef sauce, for the wild boar sauce, for the venison sauce. It's usually more than 4 hours and a half stew with wine, with juniper, with the loro to take away the acidity.
Juniper.
And for this reason, it's very easy to digest, not heavy.
For our secondi today, we both had beef. An interesting choice for this part of the world, for the famous bistecca fiorentina we know, but your variations were a little different. Can you explain those dishes?
Today you had tagliata. It's only the piece of sirloin of the steak, because the steak, the Florentine steak, come from the white cow. The white cow is usually much bigger than the regular cow, so the steak is minimum 1 kilo. If you find less than 1 kilo, it's not the original meat. And the particularity of this kind of meat, it's we age by ourselves minimum 25 days. So with this kind of age, the meat is more tender. And when you cut, you see it's very pink inside, but never blood. So it's more tender than regular cow. And today you have a sirloin, because the steak is minimum 1 kilo, so you have to share, but we have to give you more choice to taste. Sirloin, it's only the piece of sirloin, so it's cut in a thin slice, and we finish with olive oil and rosemary, majorana and thyme and garlic over to give more flavor. And you had also the wild boar. Wild boar instead, it's a particular recipe that come from close to the coast of Tuscany, close to the sea. It's very strange cooking, because it's 4 hours stew with the wine, then 4 hours more stew with the milk. So the meat is more tender, and the flavor is less wild. Easier to understand the wild boar in this way.
Can you explain your extraordinary wine cellar and wine list? Who wants to do that?
So wine is my first job, but it's also my first hobby. I read about the wine. I go to visit the wine cellar. It's my passion. So we start in this restaurant, and we discover we have a good find with the wine cellar. It's original of 200 years before Christ. It was an Etruscan house. Then it was used as a Roman church. Then it was closed, and my father discovered in 1998 when we rented this place. Was a garage. Then we used for a restaurant. We discovered the wine cellar. It's perfect temperature. It's always the same all the year. It's only humidity change a lot. So it's different humidity. It's always quite high, because it's limestone and it stay together. This sand stay together with the humidity. So it's perfect for the cork, but not so good for the label. This wine cellar is mostly for the wine for the first use, but we have other two wine cellar. Mostly in especially in this period, we use Tuscan wine. All the tourists that come here want to taste our wine. We have in the best, quite the best place of Italy for the wine, together with the Piemonte. So they want to taste Brunello, they want to taste Nobile di Montepulciano, they want to taste Super Tuscan. But in our wine list, I want to give you the opportunity also to taste many other wine from Italy, because every place of Italy have its own good wine. And I have also something from France and something from all around the world to give the choice also for the Sinis people to taste with our food many other kind of wine from all over the world.
I wanted to mention or ask actually the chef, you seem to have a remarkable gift for dolce. We had wonderful dolce. Tell us what we had.
I dolci sono i miei preferiti. Il tiramisù specialmente è una mia ricetta che lo faccio molto leggero, piace a tutte le persone e sono molto contento.
So he said the sweet is his own passion. And he say we can see because it's a little bit fat.
Sadija, they say, do never trust a thin chef.
Chef answered, thank you. So he said the tiramisu is his own specialty. He make very light. He don't use biscuits, but he use a sponge cake with double levitation. Use very little coffee and very little marsala, so it's not too much sense of coffee, not too much sense of alcohol. And over his tiramisu, there is a crunch made with liquid sugar and these nuts cooked together and broken. And the other dessert you taste today is ricotta and chocolate cake. Also that one, it's very interesting because it's very tender, very flavor, and at the end you feel the little bit of cinnamon he put inside.
I think, Marco, tell us who comes here to eat. Do you have, I know you have a lot of tourists come here, but you also have a lot of regular local diners, especially like right now when we're not on season.
Yes, this restaurant, there is many tourists, but also there is many Sinese people, Italian people. Yeah, I had one traditional food. And in this moment, no nouvelle cuisine. It's better the kitchen natural.
No formica.
No formica, no. Yes.
That's ants. No ants here. We should know about your scheduling. You do, in season, two seatings for lunch and for dinner. Off season, is it the same or different? What are your hours for eating here?
The hour remain the same. It's always the kitchen start at 12 for lunch and finish 2:30, and for dinner it's 7 to 10. In the season, we have seating because mostly reservation of Italian people it's at 9 o'clock. Mostly reservation of tourist people it's 7 o'clock. So for the season we can make 2 rounds. In the winter, it's quite early, especially in January, February, Italian people or Sinis people. So mostly we work a lot in the round of 9 o'clock. For lunch, it's different from the day. Sometimes it's very busy, sometimes it's not so busy. But in the evening, this restaurant is always full all day.
I think we are saying that it is really important to make a reservation here, and you can do that online or not?
You can make you can send an email, but we prefer to speak by phone with the people so we can have the right name, the right time, of they arrive, and the number phone to contact them in case of they arrive later or if they don't come. So we prefer that you can see our number in the website. It's tavernasangiuseppe.it, and you can see the number. Maybe it's better if we phone, or if you want to make a dinner reservation for a group or for a long time, you can send us an email, and then Lorella, my mother, answer.
Yeah, you mentioned your mother, who actually had to take off because her mother was not doing well. But this is a family operation. It's you, your father, your mother.
And other 7 people, but it's like part of our family. We stay a long time all the day together, every day. So it's now part of my family. And many of them, like Massimiliano, works with us from 25 years. So it's like my uncle.
You know, this is just off the wall, but because of your name, I wonder, do you do the big feast day for Saint Joseph, San Giuseppe?
The name of San Joseph comes from the arch outside of the restaurant. It's the first arch of Siena for the defensive wall. And for this reason, when you exit, you see over you the arch. And for this reason, we dedicated the name of the restaurant to San Giuseppe.
Well, we have had a wonderful time. And I would recommend coming here for lunch or dinner anytime. And I thank you, Marco, and I thank you, Massimiliano. Do you have a nickname, a soprannome? Mac. Anyhow, it was wonderful, and we totally enjoyed it. Thank you. Grazie tante.
Don't come only on Sunday. It's closed.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net. Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Our friend Danilo has put us in some really wonderful situations, which we always enjoy, as we are enjoying our current stay at the Borgo Storico Seghetti Panichi. And we're going to be talking to the owner proprietress of this establishment, Principessa Giulia Pignatelli. Giulia, this is a magnificent establishment. A bit of the history. How old is this place?
This place is dating the central part of the historic house of 15th century. And, of course, afterwards it had other works done century by century. But the real nature of this architecture was a tower of defense in medieval times.
Explain for our listeners exactly where we are located. It is above.
It's a very important town in Italy, Ascoli Piceno, because we can see and we can really enjoy the various period of history and architecture. She's called the White Town because it is built with the travertino marble, which is a white stone, very expensive and very researched at the time of Romani, of the Roman period. We are in the south of the Marche. It's a region on the Adriatic coast, and this special place is extremely south, near the Regione Abruzzo.
We visited Ascoli Piceno this afternoon, and it is without a doubt one of the most beautiful architecturally integrated places that I have seen in Italy. Lovely, and it's only matched by the glorious scenery with the mountains surrounding it. I said to my husband, you know, I think it more than rivals Tuscany.
Yes, it's true, because the town has maintained part really very different on the century. There is a very clear medieval side of the town with special towers and special little house. There is a very clear the Renaissance period with a beautiful Piazza del Popolo just in the heart of the town. There is Corso Mazzini, which is a great example of the Baroque period. And so it's a town which is really very legible on the side of architecture.
One appreciates all of that. And I think that you should tell us a little bit about, we are staying in a new addition to this, but you also have guest quarters in your main house where you still live. It is still a family residence. Explain to us where you live, other people live, how many suites you have, and also you have a breakfast facility and a fine dining restaurant. Could you just tell us about the amenities of this Borgo?
Well, the Borgo Storico Seghetti Panichi is right in the center between Ascoli Piceno. We are 8 kilometers from the town and 10 kilometers from the beach, because we have not to forget that the Adriatic Sea is a lovely sea, also in September, October, very hot with lovely beaches. So the Borgo consists in a historic house, as we spoke before, dating 15th century, that now hosts six luxury suites, very beautiful rooms, all decorated with our furniture of the family, but organized with all the facilities in the sense of Wi-Fi, frigo bar, and conditioning air, and so on. Near the historic house, we had some little houses of the country farmer that we restored in 1997, 8, and 9. And the result was of other 5 apartment flat, very comfortable with kitchenette and 1 or 2 bedrooms with bathrooms en suite. Near this country house named San Pancrazio, there is a lovely swimming pool, all framed by olive trees, olive grove, and rosemary and lavender plants. And still we have another independent cottage with 2 rooms, which is really lovely because it's quite big. It's more than 100 square meters. And the family can stay there very easily because they have also a little salon and a private kitchen. And so in total we arrive to 14 suites or apartment flats.
This is so extraordinary a spot, Peter.
Really like visiting a grand, in England we would call it a stately home. In Italy, what would you call it?
Well, we call historic houses, but this is still, and it is more and more rare, it's a private house in the sense that still is inhabited by the owners. And, of course, in every room, in every drawing room, you have memories of the house, of the family. And I have to add a very important thing, that all the heritage is framed by a lovely garden, which was made by a great German botanist in the end of 19th century, whose name is Ludwig Winter. And now, it's already 4 years, this historic garden is the first bioenergetic garden, which is very, very important in Europe, this idea of having gardens, of course historic, but very relaxing and very good for the health.
Now, I think, listeners, you get some sort of idea about the scale of this establishment. And I wanted to mention, actually, that our host was originally a fashion designer, but the demands of this place are huge. And so mainly you do not design fashions anymore, but you had a very fun career. You worked in India.
Yes, my work, my real work for 30 years was fashion designer, and I had a laboratory in New Delhi. I have to say that also this work was a great help in the work of the historic house, because decorating the rooms and finding creative possibilities of staying comes also from the taste and the work of fashion.
And this woman has taste. As my husband said, she has great style.
We just discovered something very interesting about the family here in Ascoltino, which is that they have a connection to British political leadership, namely hero or anti-hero, depending on whose side you're on, of 19th century British politics, called William Ewart Gladstone. And his direct descendant is married to...
Benedict Gladstone has married my daughter, Stefania Pignatelli, and they live, of course, between London and Castel di Lama. Stefania is very involved in the Borgo Storico Seghetti Panichi, of course, because it is a property of her family. She's very fond of family memories, and she maintain and she goes ahead with the administration. Benedict, on the contrary, has a big company of high technology.
And your daughter is, like you, very beautiful.
Curious enough, the reason we discovered this connection was because I asked Princess Julia about the tree in the garden, which is in memory of Christopher Gladstone, who was Benedict's father, I believe, who loved this place. And it gives you an idea of the kind of charm and thoughtfulness that lies behind everything that happens, everything that you'll experience if you have the chance to come here. And you don't have a very good excuse, because I understand that if you're a rapid driver and you use the Autostrada, the drive time between the Rome airport and Castello is?
Well, from Roma, from the Fiumicino airport, you drive very quiet and very easily in 3 hours. And so you can come to Castel di Lama, and the pleasure of the place is that you have so many little fortress villages to know, because there is not only Ascoli Piceno, but Fermo, 40 kilometers, Offida, which is really 5 minutes from the Borgo. It's a wonderful little town full of beautiful fresco, and a lovely picture gallery. And the Marche is really a museum in open air, because everywhere you find lovely Romanic theaters or cathedrals or picture galleries. And I think really that the best is this slow time in life. You have the time to visit, to appreciate memories and antique things, and to eat very well, because here still the cooking is very genuine, is very maintaining the memories of the old cooking of the house. And we have here a restaurant, which is for the people inside the historic Borgo, and we really want to offer the genuine cooking of the Marche, and also the wines. I think that everybody remember the famous Verdicchio of the Coste di Jesi, but we have also the Rosso Piceno and many interesting wines that accompany very good meals.
All we need now, I think, since we have convinced everyone to come here is a website which will tell them how to make a reservation. The website is?
The website is www.seghettipanichi.it, and you can find email and website and everything. And also the reservation can be done by internet, because we have a booking engine, and it is very easy to call the reception, where we have two lovely secretaries, Anna Maria and Jessica, and it's very easy to book in every time of the year. So come and you will have a marvelous holiday.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Well, here we are again, and I guess what we're doing is we're moving from one smart Italian lady to another smart Italian lady, and one who we love very much, Lydia Bastianich. And we caught up with her to talk about her latest book, which is a real gem. I think that I've read most of your books, Lydia Bastianich. I may have missed a very early one out of the, is it 10 you say? Is that not counting your children's books?
No, that's counting the children's book, 10 altogether.
But Lydia's Common Sense Italian Cooking arrived on my desk, and I was flabbergasted. It is so fresh, so new. It's different. What did you do differently?
Oh, thank you, Anne. You know what I did differently? Because I gave enough recipes, and certainly I have recipes in this book. But I want to liberate the cook out there that's trying to cook, that wants to get into the kitchen, and is always afraid to let go. I want them to go into the kitchen and to really look in themselves and understand how much common sense, how much cooking they can really do on their own. Yes, my recipes will guide them, the paragraph, my directions, all of that is to one point, that they are comfortable in the kitchen, that they make their recipes their own, and that they cook from the heart with what they have.
Now, this, of course, correlates with your PBS programming, which you said just started now. In this book, you quote how rare common sense is, which I agree. And to me, I think that you add an element in this book through your tips and also through talking everybody through the recipes, that if anybody has any common sense, they're bound to let it loose, I think. Now, there are some of these tips. Each recipe you have, it's organized by how?
Well, the book is organized very simply by the courses. You know, the appetizers, the soups, the pasta, the main course, the fish, the chicken, so, and desserts. So it's rather a simple following. You know, it is about simplicity and common sense and navigating the world of cooking and eating in the most basic and simplest form.
Now, I think you've always emphasized the freshness of ingredients, the quality of ingredients, but you really push it in this book.
Well, I think that's at the basis of every great chef and every great recipe is the product. Because I cannot resuscitate something that's gone and finished and over. I, as a chef, if I can take what the best that nature can give me, that the earth can give me, and elaborate it as little as needed or as possible, I'm a great chef, and I know that what I cook is going to be really good, because you can't beat nature, and I give it a little helping with the seasoning. So, good product, simple preparations, and with confidence.
And you give these practical little tips. First, you also don't like to waste anything, and I learned something from you that I was really proud that I picked up on, is you said after you use a lemon for lemon juice, save the shell, the lemon, plop it in the freezer, and then throw it in when you need to have acidulated water for something. I love that.
Well, absolutely. You know, that goes really back, I guess, to my upbringing and where, you know, with my grandma in the courtyard. I mean, she produced. I sort of ran after her and helped her, but she produced everything that we ate, and everything was essential. Nothing was wasted because she had to work at it and you know, plow that earth and seed it and all of that. So even when we peeled the potatoes, those peels went to another pot that was cooked for pigs. You know, that was the food for the pigs. And I just think that it's so gallant in respecting nature and earth and what it gives us. We are concerned about our universe, our environment, our this. Well, let's begin with what we eat, and let's not waste anything, and let's spare and respect our environment.
Now, each recipe, actually each section is prefaced by a little short essay where you're spreading your kitchen wisdom and kitchen sense, and then each recipe has a little introduction, which it seems to me the more experienced you're getting, the more poetic you're getting.
I don't know. I mean, thank you, Anne. You know, when I started my first book, my preoccupation was, I can't write. I'm not a writer. What am I going to? And I was encouraged. I says, Lydia, you need to put these recipes down. I says, but I'm not a writer. And then, you know, Judith Jones, the infamous food book editor, she said to me, Lydia, just put it all down. Get it all out in the way that you speak about food yourself. I will do the editing. And so that was my first kind of entree in writing about food. Really telling the truth, telling it from the heart, and then sort of trimming it off and cleaning it up as you do, you know, when you cook.
Now, are there any recipes here that are so totally new to you that you just... they came to you suddenly, but it's not something you did in the past or over and over again, or it's all rooted in tradition, I know, but it's something really new that you're...
I think that with all my 10 books, I have not invented one recipe. All of the recipes that I use, whether in the books or in my restaurants, are recipes that belong to the Italian culinary patrimony. And I borrowed them, I modified them, I made them contemporary in many ways. So I can't take credit for any of those. The additions to some of those recipes and changes, that I take credit for. But again, none of these recipes are my own. What I did, actually, I went back to some of those elements maybe that people are afraid, you know, those intense, flavorful elements that give... a simple dish, like here, you opened it to anchovied eggs, you know? Anchovy. People kind of, you know, kind of wrinkle their nose to anchovies, unless you really love them, you know? But anchovy is one of the elements. For me, it's one of the umami of the Italian culinary kind of product repertoire. It is so intense in flavor. And so added to eggs, the two, it just kind of takes it up another notch and another level. I use anchovies when I roast lamb. I take one or two, chop them up, and throw them in the roast of lamb. It gives a wonderful... when I cook chicken, one anchovy by itself will give such complexity, and nobody will know it's in there.
Well, I think readers will discover how much you love anchovies. Also, capers. You have a lot of capers here. And you explain how you work with these ingredients. It's hard for me to explain this, but they are such strong flavors. And yet what you just said is that you can use them to increase complexity in what is traditionally a very simple cuisine. And then the other thing I wanted to say is you have here illustrations, photographs of step-by-step how things are done. And I think you're awesome, Lydia, because I could see those hands anywhere, and I would know they're yours.
I get a lot of comments on my hands, and even when I have book signing, people say, can I... shake your hands. Can I see your hands? And, you know, for me, hands are an extension of my senses. I need to touch food for many different reasons. Food speaks through my hands to me. I can tell if a fish is fresh. I can tell if meat is, I can tell if that artichoke is nice and crispy and stuff. So I use my hands a lot in really sensing and feeling and collecting information from the product before I even buy it sometimes, because it's, you know, it discriminates. Say, oh, this is no good. You're not going to cook it good. You know, leave it alone, and I put it back. And this is my hands talking to me. So I think, like many other things, like a violinist or a cellist, you know, you need to have that feel of that string, of that, you know, the pressure, whatever. And that's meat products talk to my fingers the same way.
Well, you express a lot of personality through your hands, and also through the kinds of things you choose here that Americans may not quite as familiar with as they should be, such as one of my most favorite things is razor clams. Let's just explain a little bit about what you do with razor clams to give an idea of the kind of food you're cooking in this book.
Well, razor clams are those long kind of brownish clamshell that has that long clam in it. What is different than a clam, that it is, it needs much less time to cook. It needs simplicity. You need to cook it in a shell because the shell is so fragile that if you try to yank it out or pull it out, you break the clam and the shell, of course, and it chips. So simplicity and very short cooking time is the answer to this delicious mollusk. So garlic, good oil, the basis, a little parsley, a little white wine, and I put a little breadcrumbs. You know, whenever I do a juicy kind of clam mollusk kind of cooking, and they release a lot of their juices, I put a little bit of breadcrumbs in that juice just the last minute to kind of densen up the sauce, so it's not brothy, so you can kind of, it sticks to the shells. So, you know, I think the recipe is right there. Garlic, oil, parsley, white wine, and razor clams. The one thing is find a pan that you sort of set them all in line, again, because they are so fragile. You don't mix them. You can mix them. You can shake the pan a little bit, cover them, let them kind of open up, and then enjoy.
See, this is common sense. And listeners, you'll learn how to make a pasta correctly. You'll be able to prepare an artichoke, which is not as hard as it sounds. Sauces, meat dishes, lots of vegetables. I think that that's very contemporary as well. And I think this is a real achievement, Lydia. Thank you so much for writing it and for sharing all these secrets with the world.
Well, thank you, Anne, because, Anne, you have been following me for a few years, you and I. And so coming from you and understanding what this book really, why I needed to do this book, I really appreciate that. You got it. It's common sense and it's simple.
To finish, can you give us just the details on your PBS program?
Yes, my cooking show, which is based on Lydia's Common Sense, is on WQED on Saturday afternoon. I'm not sure when. It's the best is to check the schedule. And then it's on Create also several times. It's the parallel station to PBS Create. And it runs, I think, four or five times during the day. So you're able to catch it.
Depending on what part of the country you're in, you will have to check to find out when that local PBS station in Boston and New York and in San Francisco, they tend to be renegades. And they put it on at different times of the day. And if you're outside these United States, well, I'm very sorry. You'll just have to wait for it to become a CD or a DVD. Is that in the plans?
Well, no. It's airing in Mexico. Russia just took on the show, and they're dubbing it in. The Middle East, where certainly in Canada it is. So for you around the world, you can catch Lydia. You will have subtitles in some cases, but do catch Lydia. And I think if you go to lydiasitaly.com and you catch on, you sort of link on to my PBS show, it will tell you the different stations and the airing time.
Now we're the lucky ones. because we're going to be part of the experiment tonight. has Lydia's restaurant in Pittsburgh been cooking from this book, or are we doing that for the first time tonight?
No, the chef Jeremy here. As soon as he got the book, they were excited. They want to test. Of course, like all chefs, then they do a little bit of their own rendition. But tonight, the meal is based solely and wholly from Lydia's Common Sense Cookbook. So I look forward to your comments and enjoyment. And some Bastianich wines will be served with that. All right. Sounds. Yes, you are having Vespa. Yes, Morellino di Scansano and the Aragone. Okay. All right. So you're staying for dinner?
We're even more certain to now. Lydia, always such a pleasure to see you in our city and to be able to share you with our worldwide audience. Thank you so much for joining us. And that's all from On the Menu for today. We look forward to welcoming you to the same time, same place next week. And in the meantime,
bye-bye.